From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. When Andrea Bia came to the U.S. as an au pair, she was excited.
I always wanted to learn a second language, especially English.
The au pair program is billed as a cultural exchange. Families get help with childcare. Au pairs get to be a part of an American family.
Andrea's very upbeat, positive, like super helpful, super friendly. She goes above and beyond what you ask her to do.
But when Andrea moved on to a second host family, she says she felt more like an overworked servant.
I was like a mom, father, and teacher at the same time.
And some au pairs are ending up leaving the program and getting stuck in the U.S.
You just feel like you're lost. If it doesn't work out, what am I going to do?
Coming up today on Reveal.
Support for Reveal comes from the Scholars Strategy Network and their podcast, No Jargon. No Jargon is a weekly interview with top researchers. It covers the politics, the policy problems, and social issues facing our nation today in a half hour or less. Powerful research, intriguing perspectives, and no jargon. Find No Jargon on iTunes or wherever you get your favorite shows.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. It's summertime in Arlington, Virginia. The air is thick and hot. But kids aren't slowing down. Two boys play on a swing set. Another rockets down a hot steel slide. The sun has just reached its peak in a neighborhood park at the end of a peaceful suburban cul-de-sac. Now, we all want scenes like this for our kids. It's an essential part of the American dream. But what about the people who care for those kids? Nannies, babysitters, and in this park, on this day, au pairs. Across the United States, thousands of young people travel from other countries to become au pairs. These 18 to 26-year-olds live with a host family for 1 to 2 years and provide up to 45 hours of childcare a week in exchange for room, board, and a yearly stipend of about $10,000. The application process is simple, but it tells two different stories. For families, the hook is affordable childcare has never been so simple.
Now we have Anna, and she is one great au pair. She watched the boys so I could see Chloe score her first goal on Saturday. And Liam? Well, he still throws spaghetti, but with another set of hands, it doesn't stay there for long. Anna helps maintain the balance in my life while giving my family the chance to experience her culture.
For young people, the pitch goes like this: an opportunity to experience America. They eagerly post YouTube videos on agency websites to attract attention from potential host families.
I'm 19 years old and I'm from Colombia. I'm full of patience. And seriously, patience is what your children need. Someone grateful of helping, full of energy, friendly, and really happy. Your children is the most important thing for me. And under my responsibility, I will do the best as your au pair.
Sounds like a win-win situation. The au pairs, usually women, get to travel and experience new cultures in safe settings. The families get live-in help with childcare for far less than any nanny would cost. And it all started back in 1986 with a hairdresser from the UK.
I was working in a salon in Yorkshire, in Leeds in Yorkshire, in the north of England. And life was fun. But I thought it'd be interesting to try something different.
An ad in a newspaper opened a whole new world for Gail Markland.
And it was just a little square ad in the paper asking for people that were interested in being an au pair in the United States. So I snipped out the advertisement in the paper and wrote off asking for more information.
Gail became one of the first au pairs to visit the United States through a pilot program.
That was the first time that I traveled internationally. And it was quite a big journey. We were the guinea pigs.
Au pair is a French term meaning on par with, a relationship of equals. Before the U.S. started the program, it was a common practice in Europe. When Gail went to the U.S., she ended up with a family in Westchester, New York, where she began caring for a baby and adjusting to life in America.
In England, most moms use nappies, terry towel in nappies, and you have to steep them and wash them and dry them. And, you know, it's a fair amount of work. Whereas in the U.S., most moms were using diapers, disposable diapers. So it makes changing nappies a lot easier. Yeah, so that was something to look forward to.
Despite her introduction to the disposable diaper, Gail says life in the au pair program wasn't easy.
They add this cultural aspect to it, and it really is a cultural experience, I think, for both the family and for the au pair. But it's still a job. You still have to do your hours. You still have to fulfill your obligations.
In other words, she says, the host parents saw it as a job.
You're not really a priority for them. I think you're a glorified nanny.
After 7 months in the U.S., Gail got homesick and returned to England. Today, au pairs face similar problems and more. Long hours, low pay, cultural misunderstandings, occasionally abusive host families, and a sense that they have no one to turn to when troubles crop up. The State Department oversees the program and sets up the guidelines, but they leave almost everything, from how much they charge families to how they resolve disputes, to au pair agencies. And those agencies make most of their money from their clients, host families. Noy Thrupkow, the investigative fund, has been investigating the au pair program for 2 years. She and reveals Fernanda Camarena take a look at how a program meant to be a cultural exchange can be abused. Here's Fernanda.
Okay, that one you need, wait, let's see, 1 teaspoon. So here's that.
In cooking, as in life, little things make a big difference. Here, the secret ingredients are nutmeg and ground cloves.
3 of these, of the brown sugar. Oh, you don't need the brown sugar.
On a lazy Sunday in the Clark's kitchen, the family makes banana bread. The 9-year-old twins, Ella and Zoe, get their hands into every ingredient.
I think we need another nutmeg nut soon. Oh, no, we're good.
Their mother, Eva, lets the girls lead the way. Their father, William, peeks over their shoulders. It's a sleek, modern home in a village called Divonne-les-Bains, tucked in the countryside in southeast France near the Swiss border.
The family has lived here for a couple of months after relocating from Arlington, Virginia, for William's job at the United Nations.
The Clarks know the au pair program well. When they lived in Virginia, they needed help with the twins. When the girls were babies, they had a full-time nanny.
But as they got older, Eva says, they didn't need full-time help around the house.
And we realized that it might be better to, at some point, have an au pair. So that was something that we were considering, and we thought, wow, that would be Andrea's perfect.
That's Andrea Villa. The Clarks knew her because she had stayed with them when she was a 25-year-old exchange student studying English.
We just had a really good time. It was just really fun. You know, we would take her sightseeing and show her places to go and spent a lot of time just talking in the kitchen, having coffee. And so we were always around each other together quite a bit, which is why we thought it would be great if she could come back.
So Eva called Andrea, who was back in Colombia. She asked Andrea if she wanted to come back to the U.S. and be their au pair. And?
I say yes. Because, like, to be honest, I knew what I wanted, but I didn't know how to get there.
That was 5 years ago. Today, Andrea is 32, with shoulder-length brown hair, fair skin, and green eyes. Fernanda and I dropped by her apartment in Alexandria, Virginia.
Andrea is a very welcoming person who just brims with enthusiasm. She has a serious side, too. She grew up going to a Catholic school, and her faith is as strong as her curiosity about the world.
I always wanted to learn a second language, because especially English, because wherever you go, then you will be able to communicate with someone else who also knows this language. So I always wanted to learn English.
That's part of the reason Andrea agreed to come back to be an au pair for the Clarks. She didn't know anything about how the program worked, so the Clarks got in touch with Au Pair International, one of 16 agencies that now run au pair programs in the U.S. A lot of agencies use third-party overseas recruiters to handle applicants, and Au Pair International put Andrea in touch with their local recruiter in Bogota.
And then I did all the paperwork. They want me to have a certificate in, like, first aid, so I did a certificate at the Red Cross. I need a certificate that I knew how to swim.
The agency required a psychological assessment and a pregnancy test. At least two agencies have legal agreements that allow them to terminate any au pair who becomes pregnant. Au Pair International isn't one of them.
The Clarks paid Au Pair International roughly $6,000, but the local recruiter also asked Andrea to pay $1,600. That's about 3 million Colombian pesos.
If you have 3 million pesos monthly in Colombia, you have a good salary. So I told Eva, hey, they're asking me for money here. She said, what? For money? We are already paying them here a lot of money. Why they want money there?
I didn't know a lot of the au pairs paid those fees. That's a little bit disturbing. And I certainly didn't want Andrea to have to worry about that.
This surprises a lot of people. Families like the Clarks assume they're picking up the cost of the program, but that's not the case. Au pairs can pay anywhere from a few hundred to $3,000 in various fees.
That's a lot of money for them to have to foot the bill for. And if that's the case, they should let the host family know that, because we're already paying a certain amount.
Brazil, Colombia, and Mexico are three of the top five countries sending au pairs to these states. People from developing countries often don't have $3,000, so they borrow the money or scrape it together with help from family. They assume they'll be able to pay it back with their au pair earnings.
But that means that they start out their stay in the U.S. in debt. Eva says when she heard about the recruiting fee, she got in touch with Au Pair International to complain.
But I also told Andrea that shouldn't be the case, and to push back and let them know. And so she did.
The agency ended up reducing the fee, and the Clarks picked up the tab. Au pair agencies have told parents that getting rid of recruitment fees would increase the costs of the program.
Yeah, let's talk about how much this costs a host family. First, there's the initial fee, topping out around $8,500 a year. The families provide room and board, plus $500 for au pairs to take a class. They also pay the au pair a little less than $200 a week. They pay the same amount whether they have one kid or four. So that adds up to about $20,000 for a family, about half of what a nanny in the D.C. area would cost.
Eva says the difference in cost is why some families use the program as a substitute for nannies.
I think that's a very unfortunate, very big mistake, because there's a huge difference between, I think, an au pair and a nanny in your expectations and cost, right? I mean, a nanny is, you know, 2 to 3 times more expensive, but you're also getting a different level of work.
Eva says she never expected that much from the au pair program. Andrea worked 5 hours a day while Eva and her husband were at their jobs.
My duties were like, take the girls at 9 a.m. at school, so I used to help them to dress up, get them breakfast, get the lunch ready, drive them to school, pick them up, go for play days, give them snacks, give them bath.
When the twins were at school, Andrea did a little touring around D.C. Mostly, though, she studied for an English as a foreign language test.
This is part of that pitch to au pairs. They get an education. It's in the federal regulations. They have to earn 6 academic credits a year. Without these credits, some agencies say they may not cover an au pair's return flight home.
The other part of the pitch, the cultural experience. Andrea says that worked out pretty well for her when she was with the Clarks.
I went out for breakfast. They were there. Hey, Andrea, good morning. Or when I used to come from school, they made the dinner. I used to sit down with them to watch American shows. They talk to me. How was your day? And they are like family. They're a great family.
We'd spend hours out in the snow, and she'd be out there by herself making snowmen, and we'd all run out and join her and make her come in and have hot chocolate.
It was great. Everything Andrea had hoped for. She liked it so much, she wanted to stay longer than her initial 1-year contract. the Clarks could have extended her stay, but the girls were getting older and they didn't need much help.
Right. That meant Andrea needed to find a new host family or return to Colombia. Andrea thought that Au Pair International, the agency that brought her to the U.S., would help her find that family. But she says that's not what happened.
The agency just told me you need to join care.com, look for families that are looking for other au pairs.
Care.com is the eHarmony of babysitting. It helps families and childcare providers find each other. But it's not an au pair agency. So if Andrea connects with a family through care.com, she and the family will still need an agreement through Au Pair International or another sponsoring agency.
We requested an interview with Au Pair International multiple times over several months to find out what kind of support they offered Andrea, but they never responded.
Andrea says she posted an ad on care.com, but only heard back from one family.
That was the only interview, the only one. I was so afraid. If I don't get this family, it's going to be hard for me to go and see other families, and my visa might expire. Well, I didn't want to pay a ticket back to Colombia.
The mother told Andrea she was training to become a firefighter, so she'd arrive home late most nights. The dad worked in law enforcement, another demanding job. Andrea and the family reached a new agreement with Au Pair International.
It didn't sound like an ideal situation, but Andrea felt this suburban DC family with two children was her only option.
I didn't have a lot of savings because I spent a lot of money going to school here for the first year as an au pair. And I need a job. I couldn't be picky. I didn't have that time.
Andrea's experience is not unusual for au pairs. They come here looking for opportunities, but can end up being caught in a system where they have very little control. When we come back, Andrea finds out what life is like with a family who needs a lot more childcare than she signed up for.
I was like a mom, father, and teacher at the same time.
I mean, there's no checks and balances that I can tell that are in place, right? In terms of hours, in terms of pay. I mean, I guess it's all up on the family, and you hope that it's a good host family, right?
That's next on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Hey there, listeners. It's Cole Goins here from Reveal. You've heard quite a bit this hour about the problems au pairs face when they come to America. And putting the story together, we got to wondering if any of you have had an experience with an au pair, either working as one or hiring one for your own family. We want to hear your stories. You can share them with our newsroom by heading over to revealnews.org/au pair. Again, that's revealnews.org/AUPAIR.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. Au pair programs bring young people from all over the world for what's billed as a cultural exchange. They get to come to the U.S. and experience the country. In return, they take care of the host family's children. The State Department regulates the program, but it's run by independent au pair agencies. You have to sign up with one of them in order to come to the U.S., or if you need to find a new host family once you're here. That's where we pick up the story of Andrea Villa. She came to the D.C. area from Colombia and needed to find a new family after her first one-year contract ended. But when she went to her second host family, she started to see how easily the system can be exploited. Reveal's Fernanda Camarena and Noy Thrupkow of the nonprofit newsroom, The Investigative Fund, continue her story. Here's Fernanda.
From the moment Andrea moved in with her second host family, she says things didn't go well.
I was crying every day. Because living with the Clarks, it was such an amazing experience, and it was totally different.
The new family had young girls, 4 and 6 years old. Both the mom and dad left home early and worked late. And Andrea says that meant she started early and worked late.
I started working like, I think it was 5, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
Andrea counts her hours on her fingers. She started at 6:30 in the morning making breakfast for the girls. She'd take the older one to school and babysit the younger daughter all day long.
Andrea says it often added up to 12 hours a day, 60 hours a week. That's way more than the 45 hours allowed by the au pair program. Andrea says in addition to taking care of the kids, she also cleaned and mopped the kitchen and vacuumed the entire house.
I did a training for this agency online back in Colombia. All the chapters were about kids. Nothing was about how to mop a floor, how to vacuum.
Cleaning the house might not sound like a big deal, but the au pair rules are pretty clear. And they're there to make sure au pairs aren't taken advantage of. All work should be related to the kids. So straightening the kids' rooms, making their meals, that's okay. Becoming a full-time maid? That's not okay. Yuka Yamada worked for the same family as Andrea. We reached her by Skype.
So can you tell me about your work? What is one day of the work like for you?
7:30, I wake up and go to the kitchen, make some breakfast for girls.
Yuka's from Japan. She's living in China now. She said she would also occasionally work 50 to 55 hours, but she got paid extra. She didn't seem to mind the additional work and is still close to the family. I've interviewed dozens of au pairs who say extra chores and extra hours are pretty much a given. They say they feel like they have no choice but to do what the host family wants, or they might get kicked out of the program.
Andrea felt like she was being taken advantage of.
I was like a mom, father, and teacher at the same time.
But she didn't know what to do, so she called her friend and former host mom, Eva Clark.
Andrea is very upbeat, positive, like super helpful, super friendly. She goes above and beyond what you ask her to do. And I could see that it was, you know, it was affecting her mood.
Eva didn't think it was fair that Andrea was working extra hours and not getting paid. She encouraged Andrea to ask for money for those extra hours at the rate nannies in the area made, $12 an hour. So Andrea went to the host dad.
Could you please pay me 12 per hour for the extra hours? And then he said, no. He said that I'm not going to do that because we are already providing you room and food and transportation. So that costs money for us.
But the families are supposed to provide room and board as part of the program. And they're not allowed to ask them to work more than 45 hours a week, whether or not they're willing to pay.
Andrea says the hostet finally agreed to $6 an hour for the extra time. But soon after she got her raise, things went downhill. It all started when Sheepy went missing. That's what the youngest girl called her favorite stuffed animal.
And she started crying. And I want my Sheepy, and I say, no, you have to look for Sheepy.
Andrea says she looked for the toy, but couldn't find it. She says the little girl went upstairs crying to be consoled by her mom. Andrea, she went to bed. She says the next day, the hostet sat her down.
And he said to me, well, why you didn't stay downstairs folding clothes? And then I stayed quiet, didn't say anything. But it makes me feel bad, like, I can't believe he didn't say, like, I'm sorry about that. And it passed the limit, and I thought, I'm done. I'm not gonna be here in this house anymore.
Andrea asked her local coordinator for a new family. She spoke to the host parents, and they agreed Andrea should leave by that Friday. But Andrea says that when she spoke to the dad,
he said to me, okay, so we talked to the agency, and if it's not coming from your heart to take care of the girls, then you should leave. I said, yes, I have to leave, and now what am I going to do? He said, that's not my problem. And actually, you won't leave this Friday. We want you to leave tomorrow.
When Eva found out what happened, she says she called the State Department.
I remember that now, actually making that call. And I thought, who can I possibly call to get help? There's got to be some sort of monitoring of this program that we can report them to, or at least get them to look into the situation.
There is supposed to be someone monitoring the program, the U.S. State Department and the au pair agencies.
You've actually got these agencies that are telling au pairs that they should come to them with complaints.
That's Janie Chuang. She's an attorney in Arlington, Virginia, who pointed out big flaws in the au pair program in a Law Review article.
Depending on whoever the local counselor is, that complaint may or may not be communicated to the right channels to actually address it.
The local counselor works for the agencies. Janie says au pairs can face real barriers if they try to report problems.
From the agency's perspective, why would they want labor oversight? I mean, it works well for them. You know, they've got host families that they want to encourage to come back.
Au Pair International, the agency that sponsored Andrea, wouldn't do a recorded interview for the story. Neither would any of the 15 other agencies. But the State Department, which regulates the program for the U.S. government, did agree to talk to us. Deputy Assistant Secretary Carrie Laurie says if they hear of a problem, they'll do something about it.
If a sponsor is not holding a host family accountable, then that's where we will take action with that sponsor.
But we don't know what action that is. Laurie wouldn't tell us, citing privacy issues. She did say that the government plans to make changes since it completed a year-long review of the program in 2015. But what are they?
So, Noy, I'd love to address that, but I can't because it's part of the federal regulation process that is currently in draft.
Meanwhile, the clock was ticking for Andrea, who needed to find a new family. When an au pair leaves a family early, she has about 2 weeks to rematch, though the amount of time is really up to the au pair agency. It doesn't matter if it's the family's fault or the au pair's. If the au pair doesn't find anyone, she will lose her J-1 visa. That's the variety for people in cultural exchange programs.
So I was attached to a visa, to the J-1 visa, and that J-1 visa made me attached to the family, and the family made me attached to the job. So I feel I didn't have freedom.
Janie says this is part of the reason au pairs are afraid to complain, even when they're being forced to do work they're not supposed to do. She thinks that the State Department should consider blacklisting families who violate the terms of the agreement to prevent exploitation. But she doesn't hold out much hope that will happen.
And so I think there's a sense that, you know, a few bad apples, or as what they might characterize as only a few bad apples, shouldn't poison the program. But that doesn't change the fact that you can still have those bad apples and nothing could be done about it, or nothing would be done about it in practice. You know, if we were to create situations where there's blacklisting of bad families, that would significantly narrow the pool of potential clients for these agencies, for instance. And so there's no incentive to do that.
We asked Carrie Laurie of the State Department about that idea.
Perhaps. That's not our role in this.
Laurie says overall, au pairs are happy with the program. Since 2011, they've only gotten 237 complaints, including at least 47 from this year. Agencies report other incidents to state, but the department won't share details or numbers about those. She says most of the problems come when the au pairs and host families aren't on the same page.
You know, it's expectations before someone comes on the au pair program, along with the expectations of the host family. And then it's secondly, once an au pair is with a host family, if there's any miscommunication or misunderstanding about the program, that we're able to address that, obviously us and also the U.S. sponsor.
Janie says the biggest difference in expectations has to do with the program itself. Au pairs see it as a way to learn English, experience the U.S., and make some cash. Many families just see it as cheap childcare.
This sense that domestic work isn't work has to do with our general discomfort with this notion that providing care for someone shouldn't be characterized as work. You want that relationship to be an emotional bond, not an employment relationship. This is a labor program, right? This is an employment relationship between the host family and the au pair, as much as they want to frame it as a cultural exchange.
Andrea's first host mom, Eva, says that for au pairs, it's a roll of the dice.
I mean, there's no checks and balances that I can tell that are in place, right? In terms of hours, in terms of pay. I mean, I guess it's all up on the family, and you hope that it's a good host family, right?
As for Andrea, through an au pair friend, she was able to rematch with a new family. For the rest of the year, she took care of a 7-year-old boy and had time to study between her work hours.
While her experience ended on a positive note, she felt that no one was looking out for her best interests when she needed help most. We found that the State Department doesn't even keep a record of families who violate program rules. That means families are free to continue churning through au pairs, potentially violating the rules and taking advantage of the young people in the program again and again.
America has a good side and a bad side, as all countries have. Sometimes things make sense and others don't. For the au pair program, there are many things that don't make sense to me. And I don't understand why the Department of Labor doesn't regulate this program. It's like a double face.
After leaving the au pair program, Andrea got a student visa and graduated from business school. She's now working at a painting company and learning about payroll, invoices, and estimates. Andrea considers herself lucky to know the Clarks and other friends who helped her along the way. Without a support system, things for au pairs can turn much worse.
I didn't know how to really survive in the country. I didn't know how to work here, what to do, how to look for jobs.
We do not want to leave an au pair in a limbo situation where they feel like they don't know what their rights are, how we will take care of them.
That's coming up next on Reveal.
Hey, podcast listeners. Byer Duncan here, Reveal's community manager. The election is right around the corner, and this year, we're part of Electionland. It's a big coalition of newsrooms led by ProPublica. We're working to cover access to the polls. We'll have reporters fanned out across the country. And if you've got a tip, you can help us track voting problems or debunk false ones on Election Day. It's simple to sign up. Just text REVEAL to 69866 and we'll be in touch. Again, text REVEAL to 69866.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is REVEAL. I'm Al Letson. As we've heard, when au pairs leave a host family in search of a new one, things can get complicated. Their support system sometimes breaks down. In rare circumstances, that can lead to dangerous situations. That's what happened to Daniela. Now, we're not using her real name because we don't disclose the identities of abuse victims. Warning, though, this next story contains accounts of physical and sexual abuse.
Tears, bruises on my body, being beaten for no reason just because he is in a bad mood. This is not life. If it is, it is only the life of a slave. Am I really such a bad person that I deserve this kind of life and treatment? I can no longer live being scared all the time.
That's an excerpt from Daniela's diary, read by an actress. Daniela did talk to us, but she says it's too painful to talk about the trauma she suffered. So throughout the story, you'll hear an actress reading from her diary. Noy Thrupkow of the Investigative Fund picks up the story in Chicago.
I arrive in a neighborhood with green, flowery front yards, two-story homes, and quiet streets. Daniela is standing in her driveway wearing a bright yellow dress that flows to her ankles. She's holding her arms around her belly. She's 8 months pregnant. This home is a world away from her small village in the Ukrainian countryside.
At home, we have usually, if you live in the village, you have like pretty big piece of land by each house. Like, the biggest piece would be potatoes, like tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers, eggplants, like basically anything.
Daniela left home when she was 22 years old. She was studying for her master's degree in English and French linguistics in Ukraine when she noticed this poster in the hallway with a huge, unmistakable image of the Eiffel Tower.
It said something about the au pair program, which I've never heard about before. And there was a number, so I just called.
Daniela spoke to a local recruiter for InterExchange. That's an au pair agency. They matched her with a host family right outside Paris. After she graduated, she took off for France. It was her first trip outside Ukraine.
We just going to the park, playing around, going to the swimming pool, I don't know, basically having fun. So not hard at all.
She worked for a family who had three kids. Everything went great. After her year was up, Daniela returned home. She went back to InterExchange and applied to be an au pair in the U.S. to improve her English.
And they would show me this map, like, which part do you want to go? I didn't really care at all, because that's the U.S. It's the same country. I don't know where to go. And plus, it's a huge country. Like, what's the difference?
Daniela didn't know Fargo from Fort Lauderdale. But what she did know was that she wanted to land somewhere with cold, Ukrainian-style weather. She was matched with a family with three kids in Illinois, along the shores of Lake Michigan. With an icy winter all but guaranteed, she boarded a plane in August 2008 and jetted off for a new adventure.
I was like sitting in the airport and my mom texted me something like a goodbye text. And I got these tears, like, I don't even know why did I cry, but I just felt kind of so sad, I don't know why. And I've never done that before. But then it was okay, I was fine.
But when she moved in with her new host family, she says things quickly soured. She says she stayed in a dank basement room, the kids misbehaved all the time, and she was treated more like an employee than someone in a cultural exchange program. After 3 months, she decided to leave the host family and rematch with another one. But it was right around Thanksgiving. During that time of year, few host families are looking for a new au pair. Daniela says she had 2 weeks to find a new placement, but nothing came through.
That was one of those moments when you just feel like you're lost. You don't know what to do next. If it doesn't work out, what am I going to do? And that was the first time, like, oops, what am I doing now? So yeah, that was a scary moment of being lost.
InterExchange wouldn't agree to a recorded interview. But in an email, the agency told us it tried to reach out to Daniela several times after the rematch period ended and never heard back. Since Daniela left the program early, she had to pay for her own way home. That's part of the agreement she made when she came here. But Daniela says she didn't have the money for a plane ticket and felt she had nowhere to turn.
So it was like, what do I do? And I didn't want to ask for money from my parents. It's just so, because I was an adult, kind of. And it was so embarrassing, like asking for money. And I didn't know how to really survive in the country. I didn't know how to work here, what to do, how to look for jobs.
A friend told her about a potential job at a massage parlor called the Day and Night Spa.
And she told me about that. And as it was the only option, I did take it.
Daniela didn't want to talk directly with us about what happened next. Many of the details you'll hear come from her testimony in court and her diary read by an actress. The entries were originally in Ukrainian and French, but they've been translated into English.
November 23rd, 2008. And now I am at a new place. Yesterday I left my host family. I do not know whether it was right, but did not have a particular choice. I have not the slightest idea how I would live, where I would live. What would I live on? Scary. I see no future.
Alex Campbell was the owner of Day and Night Spa. He hired Daniela as a masseuse. She worked from 10 in the morning to 10 at night, 6 days a week. Alex promised that he would help her find a new place to live. After a few days, Daniela moved into the apartment Alex had prepared for her. He charged her $325 a month and loaned her a car.
November 30th, 2008. I am simply shocked. Things change so fast. I simply cannot even reflect what is happening to me. Yesterday, I moved into an apartment. I live there by myself without any roommates, and I feel human.
Daniela felt she owed Alex everything. He controlled her entire life, and she began a relationship with him that turned physical within a month. But she told the court that after a couple of months, he began getting jealous. He insisted they keep their relationship a secret from the other spa employees. He nicknamed Daniela Precious and made her call him Daddy. He gave her two rings that resembled wedding bands and demanded that she wear them at all times.
January 27th, 2009. I am a bitch. Again, the same thing from beginning. I allow the man to manipulate me. I lowered myself to the lowest level. Sex in the office, that is too much. Shame. And this is all for what? I do not want this.
Daniela told the court she asked Alex for her passport and social security card, but he kept them locked up and refused to give them to her. One day, Daniela testified, a customer tried to hit on her. She and Alex had been together about 5 months, and he flew into a jealous rage.
April 12, 2009. He hit me on the face and forehead several times. He speaks of trust, and he controls every trifle. The surveillance cameras installed everywhere, and now, in my workroom, there is another one installed specifically for me. That was the reason for the fight. He shook me, took me by the throat and my scarf, did not give a damn that he could strangle me.
Another day, Daniela testified, she went to the gym without telling Alex. He tied her up and beat her with his belt. He threatened to have her gang raped, ordered her to get on her knees and apologize, and call him God.
Now everything is totally obvious, all clear. He does not hide himself any longer, his real personality. And me, I only suffer. He is full of evil. He enjoys hurting others. I am very disappointed. A man I loved and even wanted to marry has changed.
Alex took her money and most of her documents. He destroyed her phone with all of her contacts in it. He said he had connections at the police department to keep Daniela from going there. The beatings and abuse continued. Later that summer, she says his threats got worse. Then one day, she suddenly remembered the number of an old friend and called her.
August 20th, 2009, Thursday. Freedom, right in the middle of the night. I took my things and fled, spent the entire day at the police. Dear God, take this situation under control. Let this pass the best way with your will. Amen.
The police investigated. It turns out that Alex had been trafficking another former au pair and two other young women who had come to the U.S. as students. They were all here on J-1 cultural exchange visas. Alex was charged in a federal human trafficking case for everything he did to Daniela and the other women, controlling their lives, forcing them to work without getting paid, and forcing some of the other women to perform sexual acts on clients at several spas he owned. Today, the State Department has a hotline and an email for reporting abuse. This is a fairly recent addition that wasn't in place 9 years ago when Daniela went through her experience.
When we get involved is when a complaint comes forward to us directly.
That's Deputy Assistant Secretary Carrie Lowry. She manages the State Department's Exchange Visitor Program. The au pair agencies, she says,
they are responsible for letting us know when either a host family and or an au pair either have ended the program early and or they've concluded the program.
If agencies don't update their records, it's hard to know exactly how many au pairs are staying illegally in the country. Lowry says the State Department has methods to track that.
We work in partnership with the Department of Homeland Security and also local law enforcement and the sponsors to ensure that those individuals know the consequences of overstaying their visa, overstaying their program.
But Daniela says no one from Homeland Security or law enforcement contacted her. There may be more undocumented cases like hers.
We do not want to leave an au pair in a limbo situation where they feel like they don't know what their rights are, how we will take care of them.
Daniela's testimony and diary helped to secure Alex Campbell's conviction. The court sentenced him to life in prison. Today, Daniela's life is back on track. She's married, and since we visited her for this story, she's delivered a baby boy. Her husband does not know her full story, and Daniela wants to keep it that way. That's another reason we're not using her real name. Daniela says she's a different person than when she arrived in this country.
I took a lesson out of it, and it's something unforgettable to trust people. So it doesn't happen automatically anymore. Before it was automatically. Since that moment, I've got this skill not trusting, and I still don't.
Thanks to Noy Thrupkow of the Investigative Fund and Reveal's Fernanda Camarena for bringing us this story. What happened to Daniela is an extreme example of what can go wrong for a young woman who comes here as an au pair. But a more common issue for au pairs has to do with compensation. Au pairs don't make a lot of money, just south of $200 a week, far less than the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. Au pair agencies have argued that women also get compensation for room and board, and that makes up the difference. We reached out to all 16 au pair agencies to ask them about wages and other concerns raised in this story, but none of them agreed to record an interview with us. Still, we have an opportunity to hear what they think about this issue, because they've been vocal in their opposition to something called a Domestic Workers Bill of Rights.
Okay, call to order the hearing for labor and workforce development. We have three bills to hear today.
This is a hearing at the State House in Boston, Massachusetts, back in March. Lawmakers were discussing a proposal to exclude au pairs from the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights, the state law that ensures that people who work in the home get things like state minimum wage, rest days, and notice of termination with severance pay. At the hearing, Natalie Jordan, senior vice president at Cultural Care Au Pair, argued that au pairs are already protected, but in different ways.
This is a unique program with requirements and oversight simply not in place elsewhere. The federal program regulations already address many of the requirements of the Domestic Worker Bill of Rights and actually provide even further protections. An exemption for au pair participants is critical, as in fact, there are several provisions which are in direct conflict with the federal regulations, including decreased weekly rest periods, unpaid rest periods, a provision for being on duty for 24 consecutive hours, and banking of hours. To include the J-1 au pair program participants would actually confuse participants and lead to potential vulnerabilities.
Massachusetts State Senator Dan Wolf remains skeptical of the au pair program's cultural merits.
And there are a lot of examples that we could argue are cultural exchange. For example, if I ran an art gallery, should I be able to bring people in and pay them $4 an hour because working in an art gallery is cultural exchange? If I ran a food restaurant that served American food, God help us, and I was bringing people in from foreign countries so they could learn how to cook American food, why would they want that? Should I be able to pay them $4 an hour? And honestly, you know, if you're going to hire somebody to come and help you with your home situation, you know, part of it is you're going to look for what the best bargain is. And I think part of our concern has to be that we are now putting our domestic workers that we have taken a huge step forward on behalf of at a huge competitive disadvantage economically with an au pair program.
So when a family chooses to host an au pair, there's an immense amount of responsibility that they are taking on in doing that. And it's far different than bringing someone into, for example, an art gallery or a restaurant, because there is a sort of outsourcing element to that, right? But it doesn't come into your home. Choosing to have your children be a part of an au pair relationship is, again, a very specific kind of choice.
You're not questioning whether the relationship is employer-employee, correct? I mean, this, in spite of all the great benefits, the emotional ties, the cultural exchange, it still is an employer-employee relationship, is it not?
I think to some degree, but it's a cultural exchange program first and foremost.
So specifically what I'm asking...
So far, Natalie Jordan of Cultural Care has failed to convince lawmakers in Massachusetts to exclude au pairs from the Domestic Workers Bill of Rights. But here's the thing. Advocates told us that even in the seven states with these type of laws on the books, they haven't heard of a single instance where agencies have increased the amount of money au pairs are paid. Today's show was edited by Cheryl Duvall. Fernanda Camarena was our lead producer. Thanks to the Investigative Fund and editor Sarah Bluestein. A version of this story appears in the Washington Post magazine. And I am super excited to tell you about one of my favorite podcasts. It's called How to Be Amazing. And it is the story of my life. It's all about me, people. All about me. I kid. It's a podcast by Michael Ian Black. Now, Michael sits down with some of today's most provocative writers, entertainers, artists, thinkers, and politicians for these crazy, thought-provoking conversations. They dive into the creative process, and he gets some of these influential voices to give us advice and share stories of success and failure, all while having a laugh. Some of his past guests include Lin-Manuel Miranda, David Sedaris, Valerie Plame, and Sonia Manzano. I am so jealous that he interviewed Sonia Manzano. I mean, Maria. She's Maria. Anyway, check the show out every week on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and more. Our sound design team is the Wonder Twins, my man, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Claire C. Note Mullen. They had a little extra help this week from Paul Veitkes. Mawinda Hasey is our production manager, and our head of studio is Krista Scharfenberg. Amy Powell is our editor-in-chief. Suzanne Reber is our executive editor, and our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Our theme music is by Camarado Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Edson, and remember, there is always more to the story.